travel, flicker.
She stepped through the door as if it did not exist, reopening her eyes. At first, the entry room appeared to contain little of interest, save a pair of kitchen knives that could potentially serve as weapons. At a second glance, she caught sight of a small shelf near where she had entered, housing multiple pairs of shoes and boots, some of which were clearly sized for children. Riala tightened her jaw and flexed her fingers in the air. The hint of illumination came from beyond a door on the left side of the room. She approached, turning the handle softly, but she had no sorcery to suppress the creak when the misaligned wood scraped against the floor. A stone wall of a man sat at a work desk, the ink on his hands illuminated by the light of a single candle. His gray beard was cut military short and matched the tone of his little remaining hair. He turned as the door creaked, looking straight at her and raised a finger in a hushing gesture. Then, with a second motion, he pointed to a nearby bed and the two children, looking to be no older than 6, sleeping within. Riala nodded, stepping away from the door. The bearded man stood, wiping his hands on his pants, and followed her into the entry. He closed the door behind them, leaving the pair in darkness.
"Never could quite set that door right,"
he spoke softly, walking past her to sit in one of the crude wooden chairs near a kitchen table. Riala's eyes went to one of the knives, now only inches from his grasp, but she did not act save to turn toward him. He put his elbows on the table, turning his head toward her.
"So, what are you then? Thorn? Blackstone?"
She shook her head.
"Shiver. Attendant to Symphony."
He let out a low rumble of a laugh.
"One of the Lady of Thieves' own, eh? Don't know what I did to garner such austere attention. You are aware I'm retired?"
Riala gave him a curt nod.
"Ostensibly."
"Well, you won't find much to pilfer here, I'm afraid. Your matron might be disappointed, but if you're feeling as chill as your name, I can light the fire and make us some tea."
"I won't be staying long."
"No."
He tilted his head downward, a warning in his expression.
"You won't be."
She felt an itch at the back of her head. It said to strike now, while he was relatively unprepared. She did not.
"You once trained a man named Cassius Morn. What do you know about his current whereabouts?"
The older man narrowed his eyes.
"I might not be able to chop wood with my memory these days, but I don't remember training any Cassius Morn. You go by another name?"
Riala folded her arms. She had been concerned about this possibility.
"Very possible. Short, around 5'4", possibly even shorter when you knew him. Would have been around 15 when you trained him. Brown hair and eyes. He was in Thorngard training at the time and went to you for personal sword training."
"How many years ago would this have been?"
"Somewhere between 6 and 10.
The older man never took his eyes off her, but he furrowed his brow in thought.
"I didn't train many Thorngard, but I believe I do know who you mean."
"What can you tell me about him?"
The older man folded his arms, each nearly as thick as one of Riala's thighs.
"You're going to need to give me a reason why I should tell you."
Ayara probably would have told her to point at the nearby room where the children were sleeping. Jonan would have likely tried to convince the man that cooperating with her would somehow be mutually beneficial. Riala nodded once.
"He has been killing people."
The large man exhaled a deep breath.
"You have my sympathies for your friends. Afraid I don't know much that could be of use to you, however. I have not seen your Cassius in many years."
His words did not sound like a lie. She considered using her eyes to force the truth from him, but a veteran might understand the tactic, and she did not wish to play her hand so soon.
"You said he did not go by Cassius. What name did he use?"
"Morgan Stern,"
the older man answered immediately.
"Claimed he was from some famous house back in Sullier."
"I may be able to use that. Do you know of anyone else who might have any idea where he is?"
"Would have told you to go to the Thorngard, but I take it that avenue would have been exhausted long before you came to me. But wait, Morgan did have a friend who came to watch him train on occasion.
He scratched at his beard.
Don't think I ever caught his name. Something horse, stallion, maybe. Could have been one of your famous guild names, I suppose.
She nodded in agreement with his logic.
Can you describe him?
God, I barely saw him. Taller, I think. It's been ages. I think that's the best I can give you.
It's been sufficient. I thank you for your time, Master Harrod.
Good.
He stood from his chair, meeting her gaze directly.
I do hope you find your killer, Miss Shiver. But if you ever come here again, even the Lady of Thebes will never find what is left of you.
Briella bowed slightly at the waist.
You have been perfectly clear. In that case, I will adjourn.
Shiver retreated, never turning her gaze away from the man, closing her eyes for only an instant as she reached the door.
Travel. Flicker.
She stepped backward, carrying herself out of the building and withdrew into the night. When Riala slunk back into the Theus Manor, she found Jonan conspicuously missing from the bedchamber that had been set aside for them. Uninterested in conversation with the patrolling guards, she concealed herself while she wandered the halls to find him. It was a disturbingly simple affair, leading her to the conclusion that other intruders could do the same without difficulty. "Stop moving!" The familiar voice was accompanied by a burst of flame that disrupted the wreath of shadows that enshrouded her.
"How did he—"
"I mean now. No sudden movements." She frowned and raised her hands in a gesture of peace.
"It's just me,"
she heard Jonan sigh behind her.
"Gods, Voriana, you can't just walk around concealed like that. You'll alarm people who detect you, like myself, for example." "I was looking for you,"
Riala spun around, folding her arms. There was no sign of Jonan behind her, not even a shadow.
"Oh, you're going to lecture me while you're invisible. Hypocrisy, thy name is Kestrian."
Jonan appeared, rubbing the side of his head, looking haggard.
"They know I wander around here invisible, Voriana. That's part of our security plan. They are not aware that you are a shadow sorceress, and even I couldn't distinguish who you were in that state. You can take that as a compliment to your abilities, but please use them with a bit more discretion."
She folded her arms.
"I didn't want to deal with people."
"Fine." He waved a hand at her. She saw him shimmer for a moment and understood that he had just made the pair of them invisible. The visual effect was unnecessary. It was simply a courtesy on his part.
"Now you don't have to. Follow me."
Riella nodded gratefully. Social contact with strangers was the last thing she needed right now. Jonan led the way to an unfamiliar room on the second floor of the manor, turned a key in the lock, and opened the door. The walls within were lined with a familiar set of mirrors. Others were standing in a hexagonal shape near the middle of the room, with one missing face, presumably so someone could walk inside and look at them. Each showed a different image, and at a glance, she guessed there were at least 15 mirrors in total within the room. Jonan gestured for her to follow as he stepped in, closing and locking the door after she followed him inside. He waved a hand, shimmering again, indicating an end to their invisibility. "My new staging area," she whistled softly.
"You had the mirrors transported here?"
"Not all of them. Just the new ones, and a few others. I've spent most of the day figuring out what Ayara meant by improved, and I just discovered one of the things she was referring to." He jerked a thumb at a mirror on the right side of the chamber. The image within was a figure stalking the halls of House Theus, enshrouded in shadows. Rather than nearly invisible within the mundane darkness, however, a bright green outline surrounded the figure.
"Ah, that's how you found me. So these new mirrors detect and display sorceress auras?"
Kestrian nodded and sat on the floor. There were no chairs in the room, no tables. Any furniture within must have been removed to accommodate the mirrors. "Some specific dominions, at least. Apparently shadow is one of them. They do the same for sight sorcery, so you could have caught me through the same method." She sat down across from him and folded her arms.
"Wouldn't help much if I can't activate them."
"Ayara seems to have intended for these mirrors to be somewhat more accessible than mine. Sight sorcery is no longer necessary. There are glyphs on the frames with specific functions. All you have to do is touch them. Briala raised an eyebrow.
That sounds very useful.
Makes me feel somewhat obsolete, but yes. Now that I've figured out how these work, it's my intent to share that information with the guards and keep one of them in here at all times. As you saw, the mirrors are excellent for catching intruders.
But what are these mirrors looking at? I didn't see any matching mirror in the hallway.
Most of these, he pointed to the mirrors behind him, correspond to a specific mirror in a bedchamber. For the hallways, I had to be somewhat more creative. Initially, I asked Baroness Nadalia if I could build mirrors into the masonry above the halls. She was quite insistent that would be disruptive to the ambiance of the manor, whatever that means. He paused for a moment, pointing downward. So, we pulled up some of the floorboards in the upper floor and put the mirrors underneath the boards, facing downward. Then I dominion-bonded the surfaces below the mirrors to be invisible to sight sorcery. Thus, all the hallways on the first floor and some of the ones on the second floor are being watched by mirrors concealed above them. Riala whistled appreciatively.
Not a bad idea. Seems like you're a bit short on mirror coverage, though.
He nodded. It isn't perfect. We didn't have enough mirrors to cover the grounds, and I wanted to keep a few of them back at home. I prioritized having the new ones moved since they're more reliable for this sort of situation. The ones I made were primarily for long-term observation, not identifying immediate threats.
You should tell me about all the functions of the new mirrors, but first, we should discuss our assignment.
I suppose this room is probably secure enough. What did you find? She glanced from side to side self-consciously at his statement, feeling a new pang of nervousness.
Nothing of great significance. His old teacher has not seen him in years, but he did use another identity at some point. Morgan Stern. He also apparently had an ally that went by Stallion or another horse-derived name.
Stallion? An S, maybe?
Seems likely. I will inquire about a Stallion at the Thorngard base tomorrow.
Jonan scratched his chin. Thanks. I haven't found much. I talked to one other S, but she didn't have anything on him. Riella narrowed her indigo eyes.
You didn't tell me you had another contact here.
She's just someone I had to deliver something to.
Symphony prefers for us to keep our information compartmentalized. I'm aware, but I find it frustrating.
Jonan covered his face with his hand. Why'd you get involved with her? I warned you not to. You shouldn't have to deal with assignments like this.
Really? You're going to chastise me for taking a deal with your own master?
Jonan put his hand down, tensing his jaw.
I didn't choose this life, Riella. I brought you to Sullier to try to find help. You follow Ayara long enough, the only thing you're going to find is knives in the dark.
Riella pushed herself off the floor, leaning down toward Jonan.
You think I don't know that? You're sweet, Kestrian, but you're also hopelessly naive if you think I ever had a choice. She found me within days of my arrival in Sullier and made me an offer. I delayed as long as I could, but Elias needed help.
Jonan lay back on the ground, turning his head away.
There were other choices. Rethri sorcerers who might have looked for a solution to your brother's problem, or other Vakes, ones with smaller prices for their help, like Diamond or Sharp. You think going to another Vakes after Ayara offered me employment would have worked in my favor? Please, Kestrian, listen to yourself. Going to Sharp would have put me in Ayara's net through an intermediary. Going to Diamond would have risked angering her, and Diamond would have offered no protection from that.
Jonan shut his eyes.
The cost, though, Riella smiled softly. Where I come from, there's a nursery rhyme about the Blackstone Assassin.
Ever fear the Stone of Black, for when you are alone, the Blackstone, the Shadow, comes to visit you and traps you in his stone.
That's the one. It never scared me. When I was young, it was just a silly rhyme. By the time I was old enough to understand it, I knew there were worse fates than anything Jacinth offered. A swift blade through the heart doesn't scare me.
Riella tightened her hands into fists.
Symphony, on the other hand, her stories terrified me. The story about Red Connor, who scorned Symphony and found his wife and children dead by his own hand. The tale of the Mad Countess, who claimed to be more beautiful than Ayara and woke without a face. Those are the costs for defying the thief, Jonin.
I know. His voice was barely a whisper.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to attract her to you.
No, Jonin. She smiled.
A master of terrifying power may be exactly what I need.
Chapter 15 Lydia 4 An Immortal's Judgment. Lydia rubbed at her temples, ineffectively combating the headache that was developing from the overuse of her sorcery. As much as she would have preferred to use more mundane searching methods, they simply weren't time-efficient, and the longer she waited, the higher the likelihood the assassin could claim a second victim.
Wonder which bits of knowledge I sacrificed today. Maybe I'll fail to recognize one of my friends when I go back to the Citadel. It wouldn't be the first time.
Climbing the spiral staircase between rooms, she briefly removed a small mirror from her pouch, glancing at the surface. A fresh note was reflected in the mirror, causing her to momentarily pause in her step.
Most likely not one of mine. Others, more likely. Blake Hardigan, a Landir Tetherial, Shalvanar Vorenthal, Nakane Theus, Volanin Dianis, Eric Taran.
Lydia slipped the mirror away.
Eric Taran? That's a rather depressing thought, but not quite crazy. I doubt it's Nakane. Her reaction to her brother's death has been pretty cold, but that's probably just a reflection of her father's personality. Baron Theus has a reputation for being very matter-of-fact. I'll need to write back to Jonin soon and see if I can get him to investigate some of the others while I finish things here.
She shook her head, moving to the entrance of the next chamber with Blake Hardigan only a few steps behind her. Thus far, he had shown only amusement at her efforts to find signs that he was responsible for Calcirus Theus's death. She had suspected the legendary sorcerer would have restricted her movements within the tower, but he had simply allowed her to wander through his home, throwing investigative spells out in the most efficient ways she could manage. His home was littered with objects carrying sorcerous auras. Even some of the silverware had glowed under her observation. The man was famous for his enchanting skills, but even she hadn't expected the sheer number of dominion-bonded items he had around. A thief could have retired by pawning the contents of one of Hardigan's closets. By the time she found a room that interested her, Lydia's mind was burning from the scars of information her dominion had torn from her mind. Nevertheless, when she opened the door to the alchemical lab, she continued with her usual procedure.
Dominion of knowledge, illuminate that which is touched by your cousins.
The flash of green illuminated the content of dozens of vials on the shelves and tables of the circular chamber. Lydia forced herself not to blink, maintaining the effect while she searched for spots with unusual intensity or other objects that provided a glow. She found what she was looking for on the second shelf from the top on the left side of the chamber.
Dominion essence. Solid form, she noted, inspecting the row of glowing jars.
The jars were circular, with a broad base, about the length of a hand. Some contained only a few pebble-sized nuggets. Others were completely filled. She blinked, dismissing her spell, which allowed her to read the labels on the sides of the jars.
Dominion of flame refined, dominion of lightning, dominion of protection, dominion of sight, dominion of air, dominion of motion, dominion of knowledge, dominion of travel.
Lydia adjusted her glasses, inspecting the last jar. There were only a few stones inside, each seemingly a small, perfect sphere.
They look like the marbles I used to play with as a child. How oddly ordinary. No dominion of poison, but of course he wouldn't necessarily keep anything that incriminating along with the rest of the supplies. And these are solid, just like the stone I found.
She turned to Hardigan. It's unusual to see dominion essence in a solid form when it isn't for a solid dominion like stone or metal. You also seem to have an extraordinary amount of some of these types. Can you explain to me how you obtained this essence and what it is used for?
Well, if you have time for a lecture, I suppose. I thought you were here for an investigation.
He scratched at his chin, his eyes showing his amusement.
That ring you're wearing, how do you think it was made?
She lifted up her hand, glancing at the blue-white crystal inlaid in the silvery band. Typically, objects are dominion-bonded by saturating them in the desired form of essence, and then casting a spell to activate the essence within, creating a specific persistent effect. The object is powered by the essence until the supply runs out.
Hardigan nodded, waving a hand. Yes, typically. What about that ring?
I didn't come here to feel like a child in a classroom. You're implying that the crystal in the band is dominion essence, I take it?
Yes, but that's not the important part. It was something of a trick question, unless you've had a chance to look beneath the gem.
She raised an eyebrow. Beneath the gem?
That's where the marks go.
Lydia folded her arms, standing up straighter and shifting her weight. That would make some degree of sense, actually. I had assumed Donovan had come up with his method of dominion marking items, and later people, completely on his own. If Hardigan had already figured out how to mark items, Donovan just needed to figure out how to apply them to people rather than objects. That would have required much less research, and less of a logical leap to even get started with the attempt. She glanced back at the jars, then straight at Hardigan. If that's true, and this is a dominion-marked ring, that means you've known how to mark items for years. The sorcerer nodded, leaning back against the table in the center of the room that hosted a wide variety of alchemical supplies.
Yes, that's true.
Her expression darkened into a glower.
And you taught that technique to Donovan, and presumably some of your other apprentices?
The ancient sorcerer let out a sigh, shaking his head.
Yes, I did. I can see where this line of question is going.
Why? Why didn't you share that knowledge with everyone? The things we could make if we knew how.
That's precisely the reason why I didn't give out that knowledge freely, girl. People are dangerous enough without the kind of weapons they could develop with dominion marks. I took the utmost care in ensuring my creations would not be abused. And even so, I failed. I gave that ring to Donovan. Gave him the secrets necessary to make more items like it, and he used that knowledge to make the pretense of godhood.
Hardigan stood up. The humor faded from his expression. He took a step forward, straightening his back and leaning forward.
Donovan was a good man. One of the best I knew. He was a true believer in Cytira, and in sharing for the betterment of all those that live. You saw firsthand the results of his dedication to that cause.
Lydia took a step back. Hardigan was vastly more intimidating when he was looming over her, no longer projecting the illusion of a simple old man. The mirth on his face had shifted into a blend of anger and sorrow, and she had little interest in provoking that further, but she could not stop herself from speaking.
Donovan was only capable of that deception because so few of us could even conceptualize the idea of humans being able to create dominion marks. Even the knowledge that the technique was possible could have prevented—
Bah! He wasn't deceiving a city full of sorcerers, Miss Scryer. He was lying to ordinary folk, in the same manner other sorcerers have for centuries. You think a farmer or a blacksmith knows enough about sorcerer's theory to say, oh, he's probably just using dominion marks. That's folly, and you should know better.
You're mischaracterizing my argument. He had other sorcerers working for him, and certainly many others passing through the kingdom. One of them would have figured him out.
And who is to say that they didn't? You may have been the one to take the steps to overthrow him, yes, but that does not mean that others were unaware of his actions. One does not simply overthrow a god, real or false, without consequences. What is happening in his city now, I wonder?
Byron is ruling, at least in name. His mother most likely continues to puppet the government, but now she lacks any significant competition. She retains her reputation as a goddess, even with Adon marked as a traitor. If she proves to be a worse ruler than Adon was, we may have made a terrible mistake.
Nevertheless, she looked away, there is a significant potential for doing good with this type of knowledge. I can understand your hesitation, since Donovan clearly abused the trust you gave him, but that does not mean that you were wrong to teach him.
Hardigan let out a deep laugh, bending over at his waist. Oh, child, the irony may be lost on you. But you sound just like he did.
She turned back to him, tilting her head to the side. Hartigan rubbed at his forehead.
Donovan told me the same thing, you know, that we should share all my secrets. Compressing essence, my supposed immortality, how to make dominion marks. In some respects, I'm surprised he didn't do it himself after he left my service. You heard him preach, I'm sure, or at least heard about his philosophy, that humans should strive toward divinity. Ultimately, I'm sure that's why he claimed to be a god himself. He wanted to believe it was possible, and to encourage others to do the same. And yet, he still did not share the secret. Why do you think that is?
I assumed it was that he only wanted to extend that kind of power to people he trusted would not use it against him. His knowledge was the most powerful tool for his vendetta against the true gods.
Perhaps that was a part of the answer, and in some respects, I admit, it is part of my own. Fear. But not a fear of my own death at the hands of other sorcerers, as you might expect. I faced the inevitability of my own demise many years ago. You may find that strange to hear, coming from a supposed immortal, but the truth is that at my age, death is a constant companion. I will welcome the chance to meet him when my work is done, but that, I fear, is a long way away.
Lydia folded her hands in front of her.
If not death, then what do you fear?
Nothing less than the extinction of the human race, my dear. That, I believe, is where sharing this knowledge with the world would lead.
She quirked an eyebrow.
That's quite a leap. I saw Donovan manage some impressive things, and I've heard stories about Hartigan's Star, but...
Hartigan's Star is the pinnacle of my accomplishments, and my eternal shame. I should have destroyed it as soon as I realized what it was capable of. I still should destroy it. My pride and my fear bar me from the rational course.
Why would you want to destroy the ring?
He lowered his head.
Because, Miss Scryer, that ring could consume the world in fire.
She narrowed her eyes.
Surely you're being hyperbolic with that statement.
I do not think so. Have you attempted to use that ring you are wearing?
She lifted up her right hand, examining the ring again.
Yes, but I have never managed to make it work.
Good. That means Donovan did not abandon the protections I placed on it. Not entirely, at least. Show me how you've tried to use it.
She pointed her hand at him.
You certain that's a good idea? There are sorcerous objects all over this room.
We both know the ring isn't going to activate. I just want to see your methodology.
He waved a hand dismissively.
Please, humor me.
I don't really want to give away that I've been studying the language Adon constructed, but the potential gains from this conversation outweigh the risks.
Eru Volar Shantaris, she spoke, using the same incantation Adon had to create his blue-white fire. She had tried the other incantations Adon had used as well, but none of them appeared to function. Her identification spell had indicated the ring was tied to the Dominion of Flame, indicating that the fire spell was the most likely candidate for the ring's function.
Ah, interesting.
He nodded.
Thank you. You seem to have some idea of what you're doing, but you're missing a key step, and one you couldn't have been fairly expected to guess.
You don't need to placate me. Just give me the answer. Which is...
Do you know what makes Dominion-marked items superior to simple Dominion-bonded ones?
Lydia sighed.
Another question to answer a question. I don't blame him for wanting to flaunt his knowledge, but this is getting a little excessive.
Primarily flexibility, from what I understand. A Dominion-bonded item just has a pool of essence from a single Dominion to draw from and a set function. Adon appeared to be able to make the same item have multiple different functions by invoking the Dominion mark in different ways. Hartigan turned around, lifting a vial off of the table.
A good answer, but not the key one, if you'll forgive my sorcery pun. In fact, until I heard your incantation there, I had barely considered the application you just described. That's all Adon's work, and I thank you for sharing it with me.
Oh, bastard.
My reasons for using Dominion marks is quite different. You touched on the first point, if not directly. A Dominion-marked item can access multiple different Dominions at once. The mark itself is imbued with essence rather than the entire item. That is not the most important part either, however. The most important part is the ability to connect a Dominion-marked item to other things.
Like how Adon marked humans, allowing them to draw from the items at a distance. Someone with dozens of marks could presumably have access to dozens of types of sorcery without even carrying a single item on them. You can bond the items to specific people to give the person access to new types of sorcery. That does seem like it has vast potential for someone wealthy enough to make a large variety of items. Like yourself, for example?
Hardigan nodded absently. Oh, yes, that's possible. But that's not the most important part either.
What else could he mean? Using bonds to make a sorcerer stronger at their own specialization, perhaps? Or combining different types of sorcery together in ways that are normally impossible?
She gave no indication of her thoughts, and after a moment, he smirked and spoke again.
The Dominions themselves, Miss Scryer. There are three marks beneath the stone. The first allows the wearer to use the stone to connect with the Dominion of Flame, using the stone's essence as a catalyst instead of the user's. The second mark draws continuously from the Dominion of Flame to restore the stone to its full capacity. The third mark prevents the ring from being activated by anyone who is not bonded to it.
Lydia raised a hand and rubbed her forehead. Of course it doesn't work unless it's been bonded. That's such an obvious defense mechanism. I can't believe I didn't think of it. Why are you telling me all this? Didn't you just explain that it was too dangerous to share all this information?
He shrugged.
I'm only telling you a theory, Miss Scryer. That doesn't give you anywhere near enough information to replicate the process on its own. My reasoning is simple enough. I can't stand the idea of someone wearing one of my rings that doesn't even know how it works.
She fidgeted with the ring, turning it around on her finger. That's magnanimous of you, considering how I obtained it, but I won't turn down information. Will you show me how to bond the ring to myself, so I can actually use it?
Well, I suppose I should probably determine if you plan to arrest me first, my dear girl. It wouldn't do to equip you with the ring just to have you use it against me, would it?
She chuckled. Oh, is that what you're playing at? This has to be the world's most elaborate bribe. All right, Hardigan, that seems fair. So to get back to the core point, you're saying you use all these pieces of solid essence in rings and other trinkets to make Dominion-marked items?
Not precisely. You see that there are two jars for the Dominion of Flame?
She nodded. Yes, one of them is marked refined. Examining the two jars, she noted that the stones in the first looked like simple red rocks, rough and uneven. The contents of the refined jar looked like cut gemstones, similar to the one in her ring. Or, she realized, the gems in the hilt and pommel of the Sekhess. That could mean that even the gods themselves may have used similar techniques to Hardigan's when they constructed that blade. Fascinating.
As I'm sure you're aware, flame doesn't exactly like to be stored in a solid state. The same is true for many of the other dominions you see represented there. To get solid flame, I conjure dominion essence into specific materials that are capable of holding it. Those are volcanic rocks in the first jar. They can be safely saturated with a high degree of flame without melting or losing the essence. Once I have stored up several of those, I transfer the essence from them into something even more stable, an artificial gemstone, like the one in your ring. I will not tell you the process of making such gems. That step is what prevents most sorcerers from duplicating my work.
Hardigan walked to the opposite side of the room.
I've shared a great deal of valuable information with you, and asked for little in exchange. You may think this is to dissuade you from investigating me further, but I have no intention of interfering with justice. I did not kill the poor boy, of course, but you may proceed with your search through whatever means you find appropriate. I will ask, however, that you do not share the information on Dominion marks that I have given to you.
That request goes against the core tenets of the followers of Cytira, as I'm sure you're aware.
And I hope my arguments have been sufficiently persuasive that you'll understand why an exception is necessary, Miss Scryer. You don't go around spreading knowledge about the Dominion of Void, either. There's a reason for that. It's simply too dangerous.
She rested her head against a fist, leaning back against the wall next to the shelf.
Very well. I will not distribute this knowledge broadly. I cannot claim I will not speak of it at all. Some of it may be relevant to my investigation.
He raised an eyebrow at that.
How so?
A solid piece of Dominion essence of poison was found at the scene of the murder. As I'm sure you're aware, Dominion essence of poison is typically stored in a gaseous state. And you just revealed not only that you would be capable of storing it in a solid, but how and why you would do so.
Oh, dear. It would appear that my ramblings have implicated me rather strongly, haven't they?
He smiled, putting a hand over his eyes.
This is what I get for talking too much.
As a small point in your favor, I don't see any Dominion essence of poison here.
Hartigan chuckled, still holding his hand over his eyes.
Meaningless, as you know. I could have simply run out, or stored it in another room, or even another house. I'm sure you know I have other property.
Yes. I do intend to search this place more thoroughly, but that can only help me positively identify you as connected to the murderer. I doubt I could find evidence to the contrary. I will read your alchemical notes as we discussed, but you could have simply written any time you wanted on them, especially after coming back from a murder.
Of course, of course. If you'll allow me a bit of freedom to influence you, however, I may be able to assist you in narrowing down your list of other suspects.
Well, he certainly has clear motives to get me to investigate other people, regardless of whether or not he's actually guilty. If I tell you who I'm planning to investigate, you could warn them to hide any evidence if you're connected. Or even if you're not, and you just wanted to protect a friend.
A fair point. Although, if I am connected to the murder, wouldn't I just warn my accomplices regardless of if I know they are being investigated? That leaves only the latter. And if I'm not connected with the murder, don't you find it unlikely I would approve of it?
Unlikely, yes. Impossible, no. If you want to help, you could simply provide me with your own list of people who I should investigate after I conclude my search here. Assuming I don't end up arresting you, of course.
He made a hmm noise and raised a finger to the front of his mouth.
I suppose I could do that. Although seeing your list would allow me to comment on any names you've come up with and provide you with a better idea of who you should pursue or dismiss.
I'll have to take the risk of wasting effort on unlikely candidates, regardless of what you say. Your word that I should ignore someone as a suspect would unfortunately almost make them appear more suspicious.
Very well. Provide me with what information you can share on the crime, and I will provide you with my own list. You've already given me quite an interesting tidbit about the poison gem. Not many could accomplish such a thing. In fact, I can think of only a few who could have served as the source of the item. But the gem could have been sold to another sorcerer, of course. Many of the pieces of Dominion essence you see behind you were purchased from other sorcerers or made by my apprentices. If I take you on as an apprentice at some point, I would teach you the process of making similar items, but keep the first ones you create for myself as part of the fee for my training.
Lydia nodded. That sounds like a fair trade. For now, however, let's work on that list.
Hours later, Lydia had finished her search of the building and rested in a guest bedroom. She had little fear that Hartigan would try to have her killed in the middle of the night. He seemed much more interested in manipulating her for his own ends than causing her harm. And it helped that she sincerely doubted he was the killer. True, she had found no direct evidence of his innocence, and he was almost too happy to help in her investigation. But an identify spell on his person had not detected the Dominion of Travel or the Dominion of Poison. Without the capability to cast travel or poison spells, his likelihood as the murderer was lessened significantly. While it was possible he had Dominion-marked items that could serve those functions, bonds to those items would have been detected by her spell, and she doubted he would have had the foresight to break his bonds to the items before her visit. Hartigan's ability to store solid Dominion essence was simple enough that she could have replicated it herself, and Jonan had invented something analogous on his own, in a liquid state rather than a solid one, so that evidence didn't weigh against him particularly strongly. Hartigan also didn't seem to guard that particular knowledge anywhere near as carefully as he had guarded the secrets about the Dominion marks, which meant he might have told any number of people about the method. Certainly, his other apprentices would have the knowledge. The remainder of the search had turned up little else related to the investigation, but Hartigan's libraries contained an impressive supply of obscure books, and his armory had a supply of Dominion-bonded items that rivaled one of the vaults of the Paladins of Taos as a whole. Coming back for training was a sincere temptation, and she resolved to take his offer seriously after she had found Kay's murderer. A shuffling sound near the entrance to the bedroom made Lydia spring to her feet to investigate. She found a handwritten note that had been slipped under the door.
"Miss Scryer, I have a number of colleagues that have the capability to perform the spells necessary to commit the murder as you described, but few would have the motives to do so. My advice would be to consider the few names below as the most likely culprits. House Theus has long protested the dominance of the Rethri on the city council. Edrix has repeatedly antagonized the most powerful Rethri nobles, including the king. I doubt King Athelion would move against Edrix so openly, but other high noble families might be more brash. I would consider Alandir Tithiriel and Valanin Dianis both capable of the crime and possessing sufficient motives. Kay's sister, Nakane, may seem an obvious choice at first. She is a brilliant young woman and quite a powerful sorceress for her age. I feel she lacks the motive, however. When Edric realized her sorceress proficiencies matched my own more closely than his, he sent her to stay with me to spend a year in my tutelage. During that time, her greatest sorrow was her distance from her sick brother. I cannot believe she would have willingly done him harm, and she would not benefit from it. Even his death would not allow her to inherit House Theus. She is, after all, a woman. When Edric finally meets his end, the house will pass to the eldest male heir, Nakane's cousin, Larkin Theus. Larkin was shunned for his lack of ability with sorcery, and thus he left Velthrin many years ago to make his fortune by other means. I doubt he would be involved. The boy abandoned his name years ago. When he last wrote me, he called himself Landon. I wish you the best of luck in your investigation. May Cytira guide you and Xerocillus lead you to justice. Blake Hartigan.
Lydia held the note for a moment in a trembling hand. Landon is the next heir to House Theus. He could be the murderer, but another scenario is far more likely.
He is most likely another assassination target.
Lydia flipped over the note, retrieved a quill and ink from her pouch, and began to write. Chapter 16 Jonan 4 Stealth. Find the Cinderglow extract, would you? Jonan gingerly held the crystalline flask as far from his face as possible, trying not to inhale the acrid odor it was emanating. He tilted the vial in his right hand just slightly, allowing a steady stream of green liquid to trickle into the bluish fluid in the flask. The sizzling sound at the contact between the fluids made him wince, but he retained his grip. The left side of the work table held dozens of other mixtures and concoctions, each sealed and labeled based on their ingredients. The right side had a large bowl, currently empty, and several small vials with samples of assorted poisons.
"Am I one of your servants now?"
Nakane complained, searching through the jars on a nearby shelf.
"And I still don't think Cinderglow is going to have any effect."
"It might not. But it's one of the only counteragents we haven't tried yet." Nakane sighed aggressively, snatching a jar from the shelf and bringing it to another nearby table. Lifting a knife, she began to cut away at the wax seal around the rim.
"You're enjoying this, aren't you?"
Jonan chuckled. "What makes you say that?"
"You haven't stopped grinning like an idiot in the last hour?"
He shrugged, spilling a tiny bit of the flask's precious liquid onto the table.
"Shit!"
He set down the flask on a dry spot nearby and fumbled for the cork for the vial of dreamseed oil. As he corked the vial, he could see the few drops of spilled liquid burning into the metal. Cursing, he replaced the vial among its allies and grabbed a flask of water, pouring it onto the burning metal. Jonan sighed as the burning ceased, leaving a puddle and a trail of awkward rents in the metallic barrier on the table. "Well," he conceded, "I suppose we probably wouldn't have wanted to drink that one." Nakane folded her arms.
"You're still trying the cinder glow. I've already opened it."
She picked up the container and set it down on the table near his flask.
"And clean up my table."
Jonan rolled his eyes, wiping his hands on his pants.
"Yes, Lady Theus."
He went to a nearby cupboard, opened it, and fetched a towel from within.
"Doesn't this seem like an exercise in futility to you? Even if you find an antidote to the poison that killed Kay, it's extraordinarily unlikely the assassin would be foolish enough to use it a second time."
Jonan shook his head, sopping up the mixture of water and his most recently failed counteragent.
"It doesn't matter. I mean, well, it does matter. It would be better if the assassin does use the same poison. Or rather, it would be the most ideal if he never attacks again at all, but..."
"You just want to be as prepared as possible. That's admirable. I just don't think this is a meaningful use of effort."
Jonan set down the towel, rinsing his hands in a nearby bowl of fresh water, and then pouring the now tainted water into the nearby sink.
"Use your words, Jonan. She's not that intimidating."
He pointed to one of the samples of poison in the vials. With no ability to use the Dominion of Poison himself, he had taken the yellow orb that Lydia had found to the nearby Thorngard base and instructed a local poison sorcerer on how to convert it into liquid, much like how he gathered his own Dominion essence of sight for his mirrors. He disliked sharing his methodology, but Ayara already knew his secret. A couple more Thorngards with the knowledge wouldn't be likely to hurt him. "We know this is from the Dominion of Poison, but we know very little about it, aside from its presumed lethality. If we can find a solution that neutralizes it, I can look up the antidote to try to find out what type of poison it is."
"Really?"
Nakane leaned forward across her table toward him.
"That's your brilliant plan? You do realize that this was the essence used in the portal, not the poison that was in my brother's body?"
Jonan nodded. It was a fair question, if needlessly pointed.
"Yes, yes. But if we presume that the assassin was a summoned entity from a particular point in the Dominion of Poison related to the Dominion essence we found, the creature itself would likely be composed of, or utilize, a similar poison to the poison from the crystal that powered the portal."
"That seems like a bit of a leap."
"I don't think so. How well-versed are you in planar composition theory?"
The young lady of House Theus turned her head skyward.
"You must be joking. My father wrote half the books on that subject."
"That doesn't necessarily mean you've read them."
"Well, I have, and written a few papers of my own, in fact."
"Right. In that case, you should be quite aware that most entities that are native to specific planes prefer to draw upon their own essence for what we would consider spells, rather than directly utilizing their connection to a plane. Then they naturally regain their own strength, or enhance it further, by gathering essence from the core plane. A gatherer of flame, for example, would use their own body to fuel fiery attacks, and then recharge or enhance themselves by absorbing a campfire or whatnot."
"You're using a very specific example. Gatherers are relatively benign as far as planar natives go. They just collect their Dominion's energies and then take them back home. Others, such as harvesters, are considerably more dangerous. A harvester will try to spread the power of its plane as broadly as possible to encourage its use, and then collect it all at once at a later time. And a harvester is much more likely to be the agent at work here."
"Harvester or not, it's still likely to be drawing from its home location, which likely has a similar composition to the poison used in the portal."
"I still think that's a bit of a logical jump, but I do agree that knowing the composition of the crystal would be interesting, if most likely useless. Fine. You may continue to work."
"Thank you."
He wasn't exactly sure why he was thanking her for permission to try to save her life, but for some reason, that always seemed like the natural response when he was dealing with Nakane. They worked together for several more minutes before an intruder arrived.
"What's all this?"
Riala emerged from the stairway into the basement laboratory, still in her Voriana guise. Jonan found it more than a little ridiculous, but he had to admit that was mostly because he already knew her. I wonder if my own disguises come across as caricatures. Just trying to find a useless cure to a poison we haven't even identified yet. You know, one of Jonan's typical brilliant ideas? Sure sounds like it, Riala grinned brightly. You don't always have to agree with her. Jonan clasped his hands in front of him, sighing. He slightly extended the pointer finger on his right hand, sending Riala a subtle sign that he wanted to trade places with her soon. The silent communication wasn't strictly necessary, but it was good practice. Riala caught the gesture and made a similar one of her own.
You two need a hand with anything in here? Lady Theus, the elder, I mean, the Baroness, is off to bed early tonight.
Jonan contemplated that for a moment, considering Riala's skill set. Actually, this might be a good test. Actually, Voriana, can you make Dominion Essence of Water? The supply here seems to have evaporated, and it could be useful for our attempts at making an antidote. Riala folded her arms.
Suppose I could try. Haven't made an effort at water sorcery since I was little, but I might be able to manage it.
That would be fantastic. I'll get the empty vials in a moment.
I already got them.
Nakane set a small open crate on the corner of Jonan's table. A dozen empty vials were inside. She glanced at Voriana with a dubious expression.
You never mentioned anything about your sorcery skills. Isn't it rare for Rethri to study sorcery other than their bonded dominion?
Riala scratched at the back of her head, looking sheepish.
Wouldn't call them skills, m'lady. Parents wanted me to be more impressive than I've got the talent for. Threw me at all sorts of classes when I was a girl. Never got much out of it, shame to say.
Why not just focus on your bonded dominion? Those eyes? It'd be, what, secrets? Deception or lies, maybe?
Deception, m'lady. Not much good training for that, I'm afraid. Most practical applications of it are illegal, unless I wanted to be a street magician or some such. Parents wanted me to make better than that. Well, I suppose being a guard is noble in its own sort of way.
Jonan barely suppressed the urge to roll his eyes at the exchange, focusing on setting up the next experiment. He set a fresh sample of poison on the right side of the table while beginning to mix the Cinderglow extract with his other prepared ingredients. The line of questioning had produced some interesting results among the obvious deflections. Riala most likely had sorcery skills he hadn't seen yet, and water was one of the dominions she practiced. He had seen her utilize the dominion of ice once, but skills with one did not necessarily imply the other. More interestingly, he recalled rumors that Riala's eye colors had changed between her arrival in Orlan and her departure, indicating that perhaps her dominion bond had been altered somehow. Her answers were fluid, nearly automatic, indicating either a layer of truth or a degree of practice at telling them. Determining which was the case could provide more amusement than any number of alchemical experiments. He probably could have asked her some of these questions directly, but that would have spoiled the fun. Riala uncapped one of the bottles and closed her eyes to concentrate. Nakane, looking bored, seated herself nearby and folded her arms.
Shouldn't one of you be watching my mother? Even if she's sleeping, someone should be nearby. In fact, she's probably most vulnerable while she's asleep.
Jonan shrugged. We keep a guard rotation on the room. Given the hour, it's probably Dominic at the moment. Nakane shifted in her chair.
Yes, we've all seen how helpful the house guards are at stopping assassins.
Jonan finished mixing his latest concoction, setting the flask down on the table while he poured a vial of poison into the nearby bowl. In fairness, m'lady, it doesn't take a sorcerer to see an intruder and raise the alarm. The assassin's methodology could indicate a desire to avoid a direct confrontation. Either that, or the method of the killing was a signature, or in some way symbolic. In any of those cases, I suspect the mere presence of a guard would be a significant deterrent.
Assuming the same assassin strikes twice, given that we're obviously prepared now, it would seem more advantageous for whoever hired the assassin to send someone different for any subsequent attacks.
Jonan nodded, barely paying attention to the conversation. He poured a bit of the liquid from the flask into the bowl, watching it mix with the poison within. The resulting mixture was an inert red-orange fluid. This might have some potential. He stoppered the flask and covered the bowl with a lid. I'll check what state the mixture settles into in the morning.
Good. If you're done here, you can go watch for intruders.
Jonan sighed, moving to the sink and pouring a flask of water over his hands to rinse them again. He didn't think he had spilled anything this time, but it was always better to be safe. I suppose so, as long as you keep Voriana with you.
I assure you I am quite capable of defending myself, but if you insist, I will humor your request.
Jonan dried his hands on another towel, glancing at Riala. She was still focusing on the vial, wearing a grimace. Good night to you both, then. The Sight Sorcerer slumped his shoulders, shambling out of the chamber. Once he was out of sight, he straightened his back, shaking his head. Finally, free from observation. It's time to get to work. With most of the household sleeping, Jonan was free to wander the grounds outside without disruption. At least four guards would still be awake within the manor, in addition to Riala, so he felt comfortable that the people within were relatively well defended. The outside of the manor, however, was unguarded, and made them potentially vulnerable. In his time spent protecting the Theus family, Jonan had formulated a dozen plans for how attackers could bypass the guards and assassinate the victims within, and thus far, his countermeasures only provided protection from a handful of those plans. Tonight, he was setting up one more of his contingencies. Not a defense, exactly, but a foundation for a counterassault. Invisible to the eye, Jonan walked a meandering path around the house. Near each entrance, he opened one of his pouches and poured a few ounces of glittering dust onto the road. A few flecks of his powder from the last time he had gone through this process were still visible, but he repeated the procedure every few days to ensure a useful amount of the dust remained in each location. The powdered glass was taken directly from one of his mirrors, and thus already imbued with the Dominion of Sight. While the fragments were too small for him to use as viewing devices, like the mirrors themselves, the Dominion auras were still connected to the original mirror, and that connection could be tracked. Anyone walking into the house through one of these entrances would come in contact with the dust, most likely picking up a few pieces on their boots. Jonan didn't have any spells prepared to track the dust, but he knew that Lydia could do so if she had access to the mirrors. In a worst case, he could seek out another knowledge sorcerer to perform a similar spell, or even attempt to research a more powerful variant of his remote viewing spell that would enable him to see through the glass dust. The plan was far from perfect. An assassin could bypass the main doors, or the dust might not cling to the attacker's boots in the way he hoped. But it was one plan of many. The main benefits of being in a defensive position were that he had an intimate knowledge of the location and plenty of time to lay plans. After covering the entrances, Jonan moved to the most likely discreet entry point for would-be attackers, the garden's hedge maze. It was a glaring vulnerability, given that the maze had an exit near the very edges of the Theus's property. Even knowing that, Jonan was more than a little surprised when he noticed the figures moving within the maze. Are those people, or am I just Nope, definitely people. Real people, coming my direction. He began backpedaling immediately. Of all the intricate plans that he had made, all of the contingencies he had laid traps for, running directly into a group of heavily armed intruders had not been among them. Shit, shit. The figures were moving slowly, keeping their heads relatively low, an unnecessary precaution, given that the hedge maze's walls were taller than any of them. Dark garb concealed the details of their bodies, but even with masks covering the top halves of their faces, Jonan could see one key detail. Bright eyes, lacking sclera. Every intruder he could see was Rethri, and there were a lot of them. As Jonan backed out of the maze, he took careful steps to avoid making any sound. His sight sorcery provided no defense against the other senses, and given the heightened state of alertness the intruders were certain to be in, he knew the slightest disruption could call their attention. Shit. Focus. What can I do that's useful? I have a knife, some dust, and enough talent with flame sorcery to light dry parchment. The assassins have, something like at least 8 swords that I can see, a couple axes, at least 2 repeating crossbows, and a simply ludicrous number of throwing daggers.
Even Talion wouldn't push these odds. I'm out of here.
As he backed his way out of the hedge maze, Jonin had the presence of mind to empty out most of the remaining glass dust right at the exit to the path. He briefly considered lighting